KZ Ballot Breakdown.
Ballot Breakdown.
Broomhead breaks down who and what are on your ballot. KZ Ballot Breakdown.
What happens when you have almost 20% of voters have an unfavorable view of both presumptive nominees? Now, they say that, but they are the nominees, both candidates, Biden, Trump. About just under 20% of voters don't like either one. And so that's just we keep harping on this, but it's a bad place for us to be. And I don't know if the major political parties are listening to that, what the reasons are behind it. I was watching this morning. I watched a video and I was reading a story about how many more and more people had a favorable view of the Trump presidency. And there are a lot of people that are in the news business that just can't believe it. And that's the part of it that I don't understand is I get it with, you know, I look at where my views are politically, but I understand why there are people that absolutely don't agree whatsoever and they get angry. I laugh at the anger, but they get angry. That I look at it from my personal political point of view and I think, oh my gosh, the idea of reelecting the current president doesn't make any sense to me whatsoever. Not at all. Not at all. It doesn't make any sense. But I make room for the people and I even have debates and discussions with people that are reasonable discussions on the other side of that coin that say, I can't even imagine anybody that would vote for Donald Trump again. That's the world we live in. But when you have groups of people, large numbers of voters that say, I don't like either one. I was involved I was a volunteer on the Bush campaign for George W. Bush's reelection in 2004. That was my view into what I thought was just despicable behavior and hate. Everywhere we went, and if the president was there, and I had the privilege of doing, and I would say this was a privilege for any president, but I had the privilege of being a master of ceremonies for two events for the president of the United States when they were campaign visits for George W. Bush. And the protesters that showed up and the venom, I mean, just the seething hatred, I didn't understand. I still don't. I don't think we should reelect Joe Biden, but I have no anger or no hatred toward Joe Biden, none whatsoever. I had none toward Barack Obama, none whatsoever. I thought John McCain would have been a much better president than he was. But again, I have no animosity. I have no anger toward them. But there's groups of people that have this seething anger toward one candidate or another or one party or another. I don't subscribe to it. I guess it's the same kind of people that, you know, when I'm a very big sports fan and I'm a Miami Hurricane and I have big rivalries in our state with Florida State and with Florida. I just am not a fan of Ohio State football for obvious reasons. And, Notre Dame, there was a big rivalry with Notre Dame. I coached at a Catholic high school and that was a bitter rivalry at that time. But I never once had the idea that let's go beat somebody up from the other team. I hate these people so much. They're such bad people that let's beat them up. But there are people that go to sporting events, they get in fist fights. I guess maybe that's the mentality. I'm not sure. But this double hater where they don't like either one. It's scary to me that we're at a place where you've got 20% of the electorate. But here's the good news on issues. Voters in battleground states say the economy is the top issue. They still do. And then this is an interesting story from Cronkite for the ballot breakdown purposes. Should you focus on lawmaker effectiveness to cast your ballot? Voters and experts say yes. With 10 of 11 congressional seats up for election this year, experts and voters are urging Arizonans to consider the range of an incumbent's performance, everything from how many bills they pass to how often they show up and how well they work across the aisle. There is something to that. And this is why I keep speaking to independent voters and praying that the independent voters are going to engage, that they're not going to be so disillusioned by what's going on that they say, I'm not taking part. If it's ever going to change, it's going to be because of those independent voters, the people that don't have loyalty. And I'm one of them. And I have some loyalties to people. And I don't know that it's always a good thing. But if we were to take away the loyalty and just look at performance, and that's what you do when you're in a successful business. You want to know why business owners and boards of directors and executives that make major decisions, the reason why they're unpopular sometimes, and they recognize it, is because they have to make difficult decisions. And they make difficult decisions based on performance. Because in the end, well, look at the Phoenix Suns. The Phoenix Suns dramatically underperformed this season. So the ownership and the GM, they're going to have to make very difficult decisions. Are they going to keep the head coach? The head coach who has been to a finals before, but the team underperformed, how much responsibility does the coach bear? It has nothing to do with whether or not they like the coach. The previous coach, Monty Williams, was loved, is still loved in this valley. One of the most kind, good human beings there is. And they let him go because they believed they needed to go in a new direction to do what? To get to the next level and win a championship. That's what successful organizations are forced to do. It wasn't a popular decision with many people, but it was a business decision. Now, whether it works out that way eventually or not, we'll find out. But they're striving for excellence. When the Arizona Cardinals got rid of their head coach and their longtime GM, why? They needed a fresh start and a new direction. That what was happening on the field was not the performance level that was acceptable. It is a harsh reality in the world. We don't do that in American politics. You and I are going to elect the next group of people that will begin in January writing bills. The purse strings are in the House of Representatives. Do you know who your member of Congress is, where you live? Do you know what their record is? Do you know who's running against them? Do you know what your options are? They hold the purse strings. The way it is written, there are things that originate in the Senate, but the money that is spent, those bills, spending bills originate in the House of Representatives. The Senate takes them up. It gets to the president's desk. But are we holding people accountable in the state legislature? Forget the federal government. There is a one seat majority for Republicans in the House and the Senate in our state legislature. We have a Democrat governor for at least for another 2 years. And, you know, the record of winning a second term is very high. So the pathway and the political ideology of the state of Arizona could dramatically shift this November. But do you know who your two district representatives are? And do you know who your state senator is in your district? What are their records? What is their voting record? How are they performing on the things that are most important to you? What's important to me and what's important to you may be two different things. But do you know the voting record of your representation? Do you realize that the pieces of legislation that they are working on right now are going to dramatically affect your life over what the federal government does and almost instantaneously? And I think that there's a lot in this ballot breakdown that the uninformed electorate is the problem because we keep electing the same people. It is a popularity contest. I know who this person is. I like this person. It doesn't matter how they perform. Imagine if the Cardinals did that. Imagine if the D-backs did that. Imagine that if the Suns continue to do that. We really like this person, so we're going to keep them around. They're not performing at a high level, but we like them. In a moment, we are going to talk about stagflation. We're going to talk about the economy. I just said voters are saying the number one issue is still the economy. We're going to talk about that economy, but specific to Arizona. We'll get to that coming up here in just a moment.
Strong values and strong opinions. The Mike Broomhead Show. KTAR News, 92.3 FM and the KTAR News app.
All right, thanks for being here. We got a few minutes left in this half hour. A $14 billion West Valley data center project request was withdrawn after the city's pushback as a headline. Talking about Arizona's economy, which is jumping by leaps and bounds. Denver-based Tract, a land acquisition firm for hyperscale data centers, has withdrawn its request for a $14 billion data center development in the West Valley. That's the first paragraph of the story. It filed an application in November to rezone about 1,000 acres for a data center campus on a Maricopa County island in the Buckeyes planning area between two adjacent campuses. They've pulled this back. The reason why I'm starting with this and talking about our economy is Arizona continues to be a destination for industry. This is going to bode very well. The decisions that are being made, I will go back. The decisions that were made over the previous 10 years that have been made about Arizona have paved the way for massive growth. The decisions that are made in the next 10 years are going to tell a big story about the availability to opportunity for your children and your grandchildren, my children and my grandchildren. When you look at those and you think, what are we setting them up for as far as success goes? The flattening of the tax. We didn't get to a zero income tax, but we're very close in Arizona. There is a very low state income tax. That is great news for people. Here in Arizona, it's not just about taxes, it's about opportunity. And we've done an excellent job, and we've done an excellent job with infrastructure. I don't talk enough about that infrastructure piece of it. I grew up in a place very beautiful. If you've never been to Southwest Florida, I love the Gulf of Mexico. I really do. I prefer it to the Atlantic coast. The water is warmer. The beaches are whiter. It's a different pace of life. I love where, you know, there's something romantic about where I grew up in the Gulf of Mexico. When you go inland into the Everglades, I think it's breathtakingly beautiful. It's haunting. It's an experience if you can spend some time in the Everglades. It's an amazing place. I do love it. When you look at the roads in Florida, they're nothing like the roads here. Different geography, obviously. But we have done a much better job. I say we because I've been here for almost 30 years. Arizona has done a fantastic job of how they laid the valley out as a grid. Everything west of Central is an avenue. Everything east is a street. The names stay consistent that are running east and west for the most part. With a few exceptions, they change names. It's an easy place to navigate even without GPS, before GPS on a map. But the implementation of our freeway system, staying ahead of growth and fostering growth, has been amazing. The 303, I'm telling you, if you want to do something fascinating, go take the I-17 north. Go west on the 303 out past the TSMC, and then look at the amazing growth and drive the 303 all the way around to the 10 and look at the immense growth that's happening out there. Drive west on the 10, west of the 303 out toward Buckeye. There was a time when the only thing out there was the prison. And then west of that was the new, which was 20 years ago, was Verado, when they put in that housing development, that master plan community that, again, is beautiful out in the West Valley. But we are seeing growth in ways that is managed well. Our freeways are, we're going to get clogged up. We're going to have to widen. We're going to have to stay ahead of it. We're going to have to stay on top of infrastructure. But we are seeing massive growth in good ways. Arizona has made a plan that, if we stick with it, Arizona is going to be the land of opportunity and a destination from around the world, not just around the country. We are struggling nationally, and the reason why is the oversized government that we have. Arizona has reduced regulation. I love the dichotomy of this conversation. We've reduced regulation and the power of regulatory agencies, and we have not sacrificed quality. The federal government continues to grow in size and scope. They continue to add regulation to industry and to business. They continue to grow the regulatory agencies, whether it's the EPA or the IRS or whoever it is. And we are digging ourselves deeper into a hole with how much taxation they are levying on the American people. They continue to say that it's making the country better. I don't believe that to be true. I think that Arizona's business model, look at California, look at the difference we have created. There is going to be a small amount of, when I say small, on the grand scheme of our budgets and the grand scheme of the budgets in other places. They're saying there may be a budget deficit in Arizona and there might be some adjusting that has to happen. But it's because we have performed so well that we are seeing massive growth. And I think that's all going to be fixed. California has run itself into debt. People love that state. California is a beautiful place, but people that have lived their lives there, generations there, have left because they have no choice. Crime is going through the roof in many places. There is massive debts in the state government. People are blaming the homelessness issue. You think we have an issue here? We do, but it's much, much worse in some of the major cities in California. And we look at what we've done here. We have shrunk the size and scope of government. It's not an anti-government place. It is a regulated government place that we believe in a policy of the entrepreneurs. There are regulations that have to be lived by. But we have here the trust in its people and in the business owners and the people that are bringing industry here. There's going to be punishment when people overstep. There are going to be bad business people that make bad decisions and do bad things. It's just a part of life. But here in Arizona, what we have seen is massive growth in the right direction. And we're going to continue to see it. And our children and grandchildren will be the beneficiaries if we continue to use that mindset of small government. It works. It is working. And I think Arizona loves it. And I think it's going to stay this way. Coming up in just a moment, we're going to go back to the topic. We just talked about a hiring freeze at the state level. The big concern was that it might happen with the Department of Public Safety, that law enforcement would not be able to hire the troopers that it needs and some of the support staff. The governor now says there is no cap on DPS. Why that's a good thing. Next.
Strong values and strong opinions. The Mike Broomhead Show. KTAR News, 92.3 FM and the KTAR News app.
I remember when rock was young. Me and Sylvie had so much fun. Holding hands and skimming stones. Had a local chair and a place of my own. But the beat.
So here's a little trivia. I have a friend here in town who does Elton John and is amazing at it. It is really, truly a performance to be seen. His name is Lee Huff, and he does Elton John, and is amazing at it. It's so much fun to watch him perform. And when you meet him, you'd never in a million years believe that he would do that. Great guy. Anyway, Department of Public Safety exempt from the governor's hiring cap. We talked about this earlier. We had on a member of the Fraternal Order of Police. As a matter of fact, he was the president of the lodge, and he is also a trooper himself. They represent about 80% of the troopers in Arizona. The Arizona Troopers Association spoke out about this, but I think I'm going to move in a little different direction than I did last time I talked about this. Here are some headlines. We saw what happened in Charlotte. If you aren't informed about this, four law enforcement officers were killed, four were injured as the U.S. Marshals and a task force were trying to serve a warrant. And so cops were killed in this shootout. It was a horrific, horrific occurrence that just happened. But here's another story. A video shows a police standoff with a suspect and deputies, and there were over 400 rounds that were fired. This happened in Yuma not too long ago. Now, fortunately, no officers were injured in this shootout. The suspect ended up turning the gun on himself, I believe. I bring them up because we understand that we live in a great place, but there are dangerous people. The attitudes towards policing have changed in the last few years, and that's part of the reason, I would say a big part of the reason why we are seeing law enforcement change. Crime is going down. More and more people are signing up to be cops again. We are starting to add to the number of people in law enforcement, not take away from it. DPS has unique advantages, but it also has unique struggles. And let me explain. To become a trooper with DPS, you've got to be the best of the best. They are ambassadors for the state. They truly are ambassadors for the state of Arizona. They are keeping the public safe. They are enforcing laws. Yes, they do all of those things. But it's a unique job. You also understand that being with DPS, you can be assigned somewhere all over the state. You could be from the Phoenix area, but if they decide that they need you in Kingman, you're going to go be a trooper in Kingman. It is kind of like being in the military, where you're going to be stationed. And so it's got some unique challenges in recruiting, but the job is still a noble job. It is still an important job. If you've not ever witnessed, and I've seen it happen, where cops are on the side of the road with people and traffic is flying by, and you think traffic is still doing 70 miles an hour of past these scenes where a trooper's got somebody pulled over. And if you've ever seen somebody that's pulled over or broken down, on the side, on the, you know, that retaining wall, that barrier between north and south or east and west on a freeway, and there's not much room and people are still whizzing by. It's a dangerous job, but it's necessary. We have high accident rates. We have a fairly high fatality rate. People drive very quickly on our freeways. And I'm as guilty as anybody else of some of that. But the job is difficult, and down a large number of troopers. And what's good about this, and I started with the dangers of law enforcement, is the governor's office has said, yes, we are putting a headcount cap on many offices and state agencies, and we're asking those state agencies, the people that run them, to make the decisions on which offices are filled and which offices to remain open while we get through some of the budget issues we have. But what she has also now said is that that doesn't pertain to DPS. That is a shift, not necessarily from her. It's a shift in mentality from leadership, where you hear people in leadership sometimes say all agencies are treated equal. Well, they aren't, and they shouldn't be. When people run for office, they say public safety first. It is a cornerstone of both political parties that when they run for an office, you look for somebody that runs for city council. They want to put on all of their pieces of literature and the things they hand out. They call them palm cards that you hand somebody about you. Hey, I'm a candidate. I'm running for city council, district, whatever. And it'll say on there, police endorsed, fire endorsed, public safety first, because people in the community know that that is the primary responsibility, whether it's a local government, a county, or the state level. Public safety has to come first. Let's not leave out of this conversation, and it is something we're going to talk about, obviously, I think in the next hour again, is the issue of the border, and that Arizona is the nation's fentanyl superhighway. Methamphetamine, what is it, 80% of the fentanyl that's coming into this country, A, is being trafficked by Americans, which is immensely disappointing, but it's also being trafficked through Arizona. So yes, at the southern border, we used to have, and I wish we did still have, the Border Strike Force. I think it was a very effective piece of things. But we have got troopers all over the state of Arizona. It's not just about traffic stops. And I want you to think about this. When you are in a densely rural, I guess that would be an oxymoron, but when you're in a very rural part of Arizona, if you get pulled over by a trooper, there may not be backup for miles away in some cases. But the troopers don't know if you're just driving up north to get to a cabin and you're in a hurry, so you're speeding, or if they're pulling over someone that's going to have 500,000 fentanyl pills in the trunk of their car. They don't know who they're dealing with. And we know that that's happening, that fentanyl is driving west on the 10, west on the 40. It is going in and out of the state of Arizona because it's coming through the ports of entry in Arizona. It adds another element of danger and another element of necessity of law enforcement in our state. So whether it's the local jurisdiction, and you look at what happened with the U.S. Marshals, let me just kind of sidetrack for a moment. What you saw happen in Charlotte was then local law enforcement agents were working with federal agents and trying to enforce a warrant, and there was a shootout that happened and cops were killed. But it was once again a collaboration between local and federal law enforcement. So you can't tell me that there doesn't need to be that same level of cooperation when it comes to the border, that this idea that we're these federal court fights on whether or not local agents can enforce federal law is a joke. But here you have the state police. Here we call it DPS. But they are troopers, and they do a difficult job. They do a dangerous job. They do it at the highest level. They are truly a stellar agency, and they're very short-staffed. Hopefully, with new attitudes toward policing, they're going to fill a lot of those voids. And kudos to the governor's office for saying that we're not capping them, that they're still going to be able to fill the jobs that need to be filled. I think it's a great idea. In a moment, we go back to the story of education. Arizona's top 10 high schools, shocking where they are and who they are. We'll talk about that coming up here in just a moment.
Strong values and strong opinions. The Mike Broomhead Show, KTAR News, 92.3 FM, and the KTAR News app.
So I was doing some homework, and the reason why is Arizona's top 10 high schools, according to U.S. News. Now, the number one, you may be surprised at this, when you look at the overall condition of Arizona's public school system, Arizona schools rank near the bottom. We rank near the bottom in performance. We rank near the bottom in spending. And so there is a lot of hand-wringing about how do we increase both, and will increasing spending correlate to increase in performance, and how can we make that happen? because what we have seen is a dramatic increase in spending. And whether you want to, people want to acknowledge it or not, over the last 10 years, we have dramatically increased spending in education in Arizona. I am someone that believes if you want good teachers or good anything, if you want good people, you have to pay them. There are some people that are going to, I think, being a cop, working in the medical field and being a teacher. Those are callings that you are called to that career path, that you are certainly are not doing it to become wealthy. You're doing it because it's what you love to do. But we have to pay them. So if you're a good teacher, if you are a quality teacher, you are a commodity and you deserve to be paid. I'm a capitalist. I absolutely believe in that principle. But when you look at what performance is in Arizona, our overall school system is seen to be underperforming, and we are seeing a lot more work being done. When you talk with the superintendent, Tom Horn, the superintendent of public instruction, the focus on reading and math skills and getting our test scores up has been a laser focus for him and for his office. We are going to see in the next year or so what if those numbers continue to climb. But would you be surprised if I told you that the number one high school in the entire nation is right here in Arizona? And it is. It is the basis, one of the basis schools, Basis Peoria, has been named the number one high school in the country. Arizona has many of the top 100. 12 of the top 100 schools are in Arizona. The top 10 high schools in Arizona, 8 of the 10, numbers 1 through 8, are Basis high schools. So I was doing a little homework about them. The Basis high schools were started by a couple named Michael and Olga Block. They were started in Tucson, Arizona, going all the way back to 1998. Now, there cannot be a direct connection to how the Basis schools are run with other schools. There are a lot of people that are critics of this, but you can't argue about performance. One of my grandchildren attended a Basis school, and I want you to, just doing this homework, listen to this. Grades 1 through 3 curriculum at a Basis charter school. This is across the board. They had talk about the teachers that they have, what they call a SET, which is a subject expert teacher, and a LET, which is a learning expert teacher in schools. But the courses for students grades 1 through 3 include language and literacy, math, civics, history, science, and physical education. They are rounded out by enrichment classes such as fine arts and Mandarin. Mandarin, what grades 1 through 3? Grades 4 through 7, part of their spiraled curriculum, they are teaching them introductions to, first they have physical geography, introduction to science, engineering and technology, physics, and world history, grades 8 through 12. It's likely your student's weekly schedule include Algebra 1, chemistry, biology, physics, a foreign language, English, history, computer logic, and an effective in grades 6 and forward. And then grades 8 through 12, it talks about the curriculum there. My point is, not everything is going to be able to be plug and play from what Basis schools do. But they looked at the model that was happening in other countries that were far exceeding the U.S. and how they were educating their students. And they took a model and adapted some of those best practices. And they become the highest performing high schools in the state of Arizona. Why is it? And I mean this as a respectful question. Why is it that superintendents and school boards are not looking at what the Basis school model is and adapting what is usable into their school district for the performance in reading and math skills in preparing kids for the next level? If 8 of 10 are from Basis and the other two are the university high schools, one in University High School Tucson and the other one University High School Tolleson, why are we not adopting any of these things you can take from their curriculum? I just looked up the Basis Charter Schools website and it lays out the curriculum in all of their grades. Now, there's a lot of questions about enrollment and how do the kids get in and all this. The issue for me is they are performing at the highest level. So you can say they take the highest performing students and they put them in. I can tell you that my grandson was not recruited. He was not somebody that was considered to be the highest performing student, but he was given a quality education while he was at a Basis school. And I'm just telling you that if we don't, as parents, as citizens who pay taxes into these school districts where we live, if we're not engaging with the superintendents and the school boards and asking honest questions, this is a fair question. And it deserves an answer. Why are some of these best practices that are making 8 of the 10 best schools in Arizona, high schools and best performing high schools, are all basis schools? That is a huge flashing red sign that we should be looking at. What are they doing and what are the good things they're doing that can be easily implemented into a school district? This is now, I told you, the curriculum starts in kindergarten. I skipped over kindergarten, but kindergarten through 12th grade. And when you have kids that are performing well, when they are prepared for the next stage in life, whether they're going to go into the trades, they're going to go into the military, or they're going to go into college, we are not mimicking enough, if we're doing it at all, the great things that are happening in these other public schools. It's not going to be a one for one. It's not going to be plug and play. But if somebody is executing at a high level, why wouldn't you be looking at what you can do and how they're doing it? And I think the question bears answering when you've got this high rate of success. Just after 11 o'clock, we are going to talk about the border issue. As more Americans are in favor of harsh deportation tools, people are souring on illegal immigration and immigration as a whole. It's not necessarily a good thing. We'll talk about it next.
Transform your home in one weekend with paint from Menards. Get a paint that combines durability and gorgeous color. Dutch Boy's DuraClean Interior Paint and Primer in 1 offers Stay Clean technology, making your home stay beautiful and clean longer. And with Dutch Boy's easy opening, smooth pouring container, transforming your home has never been easier. Save big money on Dutch Boy paints and head into Menards to get your paint project started today. Save.